You're listening to Around Comics, episode 168. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast. I'm Christopher Niesman, and I'll be your guide for the next hour plus of comic book news, information, and entertainment. And a quick congratulations to the New York Giants, who just defeated the Green Bay Packers in the NFC Championship game. And condolences to Tom Caters and the rest of the Green Bay fans out there. Of course, I just say that because I'm a Bears fan, and I hope that we finally have seen the last game that Brett Favre will ever play in his life. But probably not. Anyway, back to the comic talk. We've got a fun episode lined up for you today. First of all, we'll get you caught up on the past week's events with Brian Salazar and Wire to Wire Comic Book News. Then I have a chance to sit down with Robbie Rodriguez and Mark Sable. They're the creative team that is bringing the new original graphic novel from Image Comics called Hazed. After that, the quiet panelologists at work are back with their A to Z of British comics. Jeremy Mullins has webcomic recommendations. Tom Caters is back as the Answer Man. Will Pfeiffer checks in with his new DVD and cult DVD picks of the week. And we get you ready for the week ahead with new collected edition and single issue releases. All that and more is next on Around Comics. Let's get you caught up on the past week's events. Let's take it over to the news desk with Brian Salazar and Wire to Wire Comic Book News.
Wire to Wire Comic Book News for the week of January 14th, 2008. Fantastic Four fans looking forward to next month's start of the Mark Miller and Brian Hitch run on the series now have a reason to be even more enthused. Miller has announced that he and Hitch have extended their stay on the series from 12 issues to 16. The main reason is because we're having such a spectacular time on the book that we just don't want to stop, Miller told Newsarama. We really think we're onto something here and think readers are going to like this quite a bit. People who've read previews of the first few issues have given us an enormously positive response, and it seems almost obscene to leave this when we're enjoying it so much. Plus, by extending it to 16 issues, it should ensure Brian and I have at least 3 or 4 years' worth of work. This week, acclaimed author George R.R. Martin announced Wild Cards, The Hard Call, a 6-issue miniseries launching from the Dabble Brothers this April, which will tell an entirely new story set in the Wild Cards universe. The story is set in the present day and begins when the Wild Card virus strikes again at a high school in Colorado. Fans may remember fondly that Wild Cards anthologies historically featured multiple writers. This should fit in perfectly with the Dabble Brothers' process of constantly changing artists, writers, and even publishers. On January 30th, 2008, one of the most acclaimed comic book series of the last decade, Why the Last Man, concludes with issue 60. To celebrate the end of the series, MySpace Comic Books and Meltdown Comics announced a first-of-its-kind event for the comic book industry, Why the Last Party. Taking place on February 8th at Meltdown, the party is a benefit for the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund and a celebration of the internationally acclaimed comic book series. Joss Whedon will appear in person to toast Why the Last Man co-creators Brian K. Vaughan and Pia Guerrera. All proceeds from this once-in-a-lifetime event will benefit the First Amendment work of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Meanwhile, a small segment of online fans have voiced their concerns with the marketing ploys, bi-monthly schedule, and continued lateness of the book, and have vowed to drop the title after the next issue. Andy Schmidt, former X-Men editor and owner of Comics Experience with Andy Schmidt, has added a new round of introductory courses for comics writing and comic book art. And this time, Schmidt has roped in three incredible talents to help him out: Klaus Janson, Sean Chen, and Fabian Nicienza. Specifically designed for the comics industry, these courses cover the fundamentals of art and writing, along with how to apply them directly to the comics field. Advanced classes include He's Your Editor, Just Shut Up and Trust Him, There's No Such Thing as Too Big, Still Life Drawing covers the Mike Turner way, and Don't Think It Will Only Hurt the Book. Variety has reported that the Justice League movie has been officially shelved for a couple of reasons, one being the current writer's strike. Warner Brothers has let the options lapse on the young cast that director George Miller chose to play various DC superheroes. This move made it clear that the project is no longer eyeing a spring start. It most likely won't get underway until late summer or fall at the earliest. Cast members were informed that their options would not be exercised, but they were also told that the studio is determined to make the film with them in it. Unfortunately, there were insurmountable problems that made a delay the best option. Fan reaction has varied, but some forum posters have expressed joy at the announced delay, explaining that it will give them more time to complain about the movie before it's actually started filming. In other Mark Miller news, with his and John Romita Jr.'s Kick-Ass debuting in February, Miller has released a soundtrack for the series, free web banners, and most recently, a retailer poster contest. The basic idea behind the poster campaign is really simple, Miller says. Retailers just download the poster and print it up, sticking it in the windows of their store or up on the wall, and take a picture. If they then post the picture on the board at MillerWorld.com, I will give them a free ad in the first issue of the comic. The poster itself features Romita Jr. art and a tagline that reads, "From the writer of Civil War and the artist of World War Hulk," leading some retailers to express concerns that the contest might start out strong but end in a whimper with no real resolution. In some pop culture news, if you thought the Harry Potter is Evil Fuhrer had ended with the publication of the final installment of the series, think again. Le Osservatore Romano, the Vatican newspaper, recently published a pair of essays claiming to examine the double face of Harry Potter. According to one of the essays, authored by University of Florence literature critic Eduardo Rialti, the dangerous, subtle seductions of the Potter series blur the line between good and evil. I suppose it only makes sense that the Vatican would prefer any seduction of children to be left to the professionals with years of experience. After a flurry of national and local press activity surrounding the release of the final issue of Spider-Man One More Day, primarily focusing on the controversy over the storyline, mainstream press coverage has taken a more positive turn this week. An AP story released Thursday looked at the launch of Brand New Day, which started last week, and on the return of Spider-Man's roots as a single character. The article quotes Marvel EIC Joe Quesada as saying that Marvel's letters had turned more positive this week along the lines of, "This is the Spider-Man we remembered." The article went on to mention a very heartfelt thank you from Joe Quesada to his mother for writing in so much. Those have been your Wire-to-Wire comic book headlines. Good night and good comics.
And thanks to Sal, as always, with his news report. Let's get to our feature interview for today. Longtime listeners of Around Comics probably already know who Robbie Rodriguez is. He's been on the show before with writer Jim Massey to talk about their series Maintenance and Tech Janson. Well, now he's teaming up with Mark Sable, who you may remember as the writer of the series Grounded, which he did with artist Paul Azaceta. Now, Mark Sable and Robbie Rodriguez are bringing an all-new original graphic novel from Image called Hazed, a dark yet hilarious look inside of sorority life and eating disorders. Without further ado, let's jump right into the conversation with Mark Sable and Robbie Rodriguez. Mark, we've talked to Robbie before in the past, whenever we had him on with Jim Massey to talk about Maintenance, and I think that we may have talked with you briefly at a Wizard World Chicago a couple years ago, but this is kind of your official Around Comics debut, so welcome aboard. It's great to have you on as well.
Yeah, thank you, and you know, just be gentle with me. It's my first time. So.
Well, did Robbie warn you about us?
Oh, no, you warned already.
Yeah, yeah.
So. And Robbie, welcome back. It's always good to talk with you, man.
It's good to be back. I know the love.
Well, the reason we do have you guys on is that you are working on a project together called Hazed. You guys have done an original graphic novel that is targeted to a very interesting market. And I tell you what, Mark, rather than me trying to explain it, how about you put in your words what you guys have created with Hazed?
Hazed is a... like you said, it's an original graphic novel. The story, it's basically, I describe it, it's a dark comedy about sororities and eating disorders. And I think I've likened it before to, it's basically like Heathers or Mean Girls, but set in college and it's a comic book as opposed to, you know, a movie. And it's, like you said, I think it's interesting because I don't think you see this type of, there are not a ton of humor comics anyway, and I think that, but on top of that, it's material that you normally wouldn't see, in comics, so I'm excited about that. Sorority girls and comic book readers, you know, those audiences are pretty overlap, pretty heavily, so
they're
going to do really well, yeah.
And a lot of people are going to ask this, what does Mark Sable know about sorority girls and eating disorders?
You know, I want to say quite a bit. I went to, maybe more than I should. I went to Duke University undergrad, aside from having, some pretty good academics and a lacrosse team that gets out of hand once in a while, has a really big Greek scene, which I was not a part of, but I was still a witness to. And then, you know, over the years, I've dated girls that have been in sororities, and I've just heard horror stories, really, of their hazing, and just stuff that comes out, and to the point where it really, you know, things that I thought were urban legends, like circling the fat, or girls making themselves throw up so much that the pipes would literally get clogged. These are things that I thought were urban legends, but I can tell you have been substantiated, to me by former sorority women that have either been friends or people I've dated I didn't do research per se, like going out to look for it. It was just sort of something that was part of my experience and part of my friend's experience. So that's what I bring to it. But, you know, there wasn't any dressing up in drag and, you know, doing the sorority boys thing for this.
Well, this sounds like an after school special, but it's a dark comedy. So where does the line of eating disorders and dark comedy cross?
You know, I'll just say the sorority aspect is probably bigger than the eating disorder aspect. I mean, I think those two things do kind of go hand in hand. But, I just say that my sensibility is just that of dark comedy anyway. There wouldn't be a point in doing this as an after school special. But, and I think that, I think that when this comes out, to be honest, I'm actually, you know, I think that there probably will be a lot of controversy because it's a very touchy area. Mm-hmm. Look, eating disorders are real, and I guess sororities are too. But hopefully, the reason we'll be able to get away with the humor is because I think we're making a serious point with it. Mm-hmm. We're certainly not. The goal isn't to make fun of women, but to sort of, you know, to make fun of this system that basically kind of dehumanizes them.
Sure, you can sometimes make a much more poignant point whenever you're being funny.
I'd say that there probably aren't very many poignant moments in Hayes necessarily, but I think the tone is probably closer to, you know, I think Heather's was, you know, I had mentioned, but also just like even things like Dr. Strangelove. I mean, just it really is first and foremost a comedy. I mean, somebody had asked me in an interview, like, well, why would guys want to read this? You know, because it does can come across as the after school special thing, and I'm just like, you know, four words. It's just Animal House with girls, and you know, I mean, that completely sums it up. But I do think that, you know, there's an aspect of that in that, and I think, you know, look, for, you know, first and foremost, we're out to make people laugh. You know, maybe secondly, to offend them, and then, you know, third, if you know, people come away with something, you know, if they think a little bit from it, that's great. But if I've made you laugh or I've offended you, I'm much happier.
Sure. And you're one half of the team, and I think a big part of what you're trying to accomplish is in the art. And Robbie already has experience in doing a lot of comedic stuff. So, you know, let's talk about the art a little bit. Robbie, how did you approach Hayes, and were there any changes to your art that you've made from other projects that you've worked on?
There was a bit. Because I definitely wanted to give a different feel than I did Maintenance or even the Colbert book I've been working on. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to give it more just a lightheartedness to add. So the way we do something as cool as like a penis pump joke or an abortion joke, it doesn't come up as hard as it should have.
You know, for people that haven't seen your work or haven't checked out Maintenance, which they should, because Maintenance is awesome, how would you describe your art style, and why does it work so well with Hayes?
I would describe art style as just pretty much as fast, really. I think I'm just trying to be one of the few artists that really can get a book out on time and still make it look as good, God willing. But yeah, it's really hard for me to really describe my art. It just comes out. There's no real thought to it. And I'm not one of those guys who went to school to study an art, different craft. I just kind of put it out on paper. I'm glad, God willing, people love it.
I can jump in for, because I can probably, I think, you know, Robbie's being, I don't even think he's being falsely modest, but he's being a little bit modest. But Robbie's work is fantastic and really is, I think, the key to why the comedy works. I mean, I would use the word cartoonish, although I think that sometimes can have like a negative connotation, and I don't think Robbie's work is at all negative, but it does have a light feel to it, and I think that serves to really, you know, help soften it and make it make it friendly in a way that otherwise some of the darkness in the story would just overwhelm it. And I think it also, you know, it also helps you take it by surprise when you see these, you know, characters that look, you know, kind of cute even. You know, then I think it makes it more palatable, definitely. I mean, he's right on about being fast. I don't think I've ever worked with an artist who's been this fast and yet never the quality never dropped at all. And at the same time, I think it reads fast in a way too. I think there's a fluidity to it that I think is also great.
Now, in today's comic market, and we talk about this all the time, that the graphic novel versus the trade versus the single issue, why did you guys decide to make Hayes a graphic novel as opposed to coming out as a single issue comic?
We had originally were talking about doing it as single issues, and I think it ultimately came down to two issues, to two things. You know, the creative issue most of all was just, this is something that is a complete story, you know, that has a beginning, middle, and an end. And, you know, it would have, yes, we could have, and you know, it's broken up into chapters in the book, but I think there was something artificial about breaking it up. And so, you know, I'm just happy that we have the chance to do it. And I think, you know, also along those creative lines, like, I think the best material is, you know, I think it gets better with each chapter. I think it gets funnier with each chapter, and I think doing it as single issues, you know, if you picked up the first one where we needed to do the first chapter, which would have been the first issue, if people picked it up as an issue, you know, there's a lot of setup that we had to do, you know, and I think that this way, you know, we're not losing any audience that might, you know, that might not get that it's going to get a lot funnier later on. Economically, I think it also seemed to make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, we decided to not only is it an OGN, but it's a, you know, we're doing it black and white, and it's digest sized. It's, you know, approximately the same size as a manga, and it just, you know, that format just then allowed us to do it. You know, I think to tell, it's going to probably something like 160 pages of story. You know, that, and I think you wind up getting, you know, I think you wind up getting more value for that, and it certainly allowed us to tell the kind of story we wanted to tell. You know, when you're dealing with single issues, you can get canceled at, you know, you can get canceled at any time.
Same time too. No, very much with the floppy format. You know, there's a lot of stuff that probably would have got cut out because we had to constrain it in 24 pages.
Exactly.
And the advantage of the end being nothing got cut out and everything flowed as freely as it should have in that book.
What Hazed reminds me of, and is maybe a little bit, I guess I want to say a little bit more mature version of what DC is doing with the Minx line. And, you know, I'm a big fan of what Cecil Castellucci did and Jim Rugg on the Plain Janes and clubbing with Josh Howard. But this seems to be an extension of that, and I know that it's not a Minx book, but I'm fascinated, and I think it's going to be hugely successful in the markets that you guys are going to put it in. You guys are making a comic that is going to appeal to people that are not necessarily in the comics market, and I'm excited about that. And, you know, how conscious were you guys whenever you went into this project of saying, hey, you know what, we're going to reach people that, you know, may not be going into the comic shop every week?
That definitely was something that we had in mind. I mean, look, first of all, in two ways. One, in terms of, you know, definitely with the subject matter. I mean, this is something that I wanted to reach out to a female audience with. You know, I think that, look, you know, women do tend to buy a lot of black and white books. They tend to buy a lot of manga. They, you know, I mean, I'm overgeneralizing here, and I don't mean to be condescending to women readers at all, but and you know, this was before Minx, but I mean, if you see Minx is sort of constructed by that. So reaching women was one thing, but also I think not just women, but just friends of mine that you know, have never read a comic before. I wanted something to be, you know, I wanted it to be accessible to them. It's, which is not to say I'm ignoring comic readers. You know, I am one, but I think that, you know, we try to make it, I think, as friendly to non-comics readers as possible. You know, and I think, again, Robbie's art is part of that. It's an art style that's very welcoming, and the format is also a part of that. But I'm hoping it's successful in those markets, and, you know, So you know, I hope what you're saying is right.
Well, you know, I look at our listeners and you know, our, especially our forum community and the feedback that we get, and, you know, I love our audience, and it definitely reflects how we approach comics in a lot of ways. That, you know, not everything has to be a cape, not everything has to be in a 22-page single issue.
I think a point that Scotty made one of your last shows was that. But a lot of people do look at comics as a whole, as a genre, when it should be looked as a medium.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, you know, with products like this, with maintenance grounded and whatnot, you know, hopefully that helps the audience realize, you know, that comics within this medium. Hopefully it puts people up, shut people up about it.
Well, and for the fans out there that, I've seen previews of Hazed, and, you know, there'll be a lot of questions raised of, you know, oh, I'm a, you know, a 30-year-old male that likes Green Lantern, and there's nothing wrong with that, but why would I like Hazed? And you mentioned it, Mark, you mentioned it earlier, that it's a lot like Mean Girls or Heathers, and Heathers is a movie that I think still resonates with a lot of comic book readers, and I think that's a great example that if you like the movie Heathers, Hazed is probably going to appeal to you in some way, so that it's not a male-female thing. It is a story about sorority girls, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a story only for girls.
Oh, yeah, not at all. I mean, and look, I'm a guy, so it had to interest me. And, you know, I think that, look, I think it's something that it's comics are kind of, it's a weird world in some ways, because I think in the world of film, let's say, if I pitched this to a movie studio, I think they would think this is a very mainstream, mainstream in terms of, you know, oh, well, it's a movie and it's set in reality and it's got humor in it and dark humor and there's, you know, beautiful women in it. Great. Let's make this a movie. Whereas if you told them, if I try to go to a movie studio and tell them a superhero story, they would say, well, unless it's based on something existing, it's probably, you know, that's a niche thing. We don't know that we want to touch it. It's going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars. But in the comic world, it's the reverse. It's like, it's bizarro where you have the mainstream is something that's, and again, I love superhero comics and I write them, but, you know, mainstream is Green Lantern. But if I say, you know, oh, it's, you know, yeah, here's a story. Here's just a funny story about sorority girls that, like, guys can like the women and laugh at them, and you can give it to your girlfriend, and they'll laugh at it and identify with it, and, you know, but it seems like it's a tougher initial sell. But I do think that, you know, so far the people that have you know, read the previews of it and, you know, have really responded to it positively.
Hazed, obviously, yeah, go out, check it out. It should be a great OGN to.
And I should mention it's from Image Comics, and, mm-hmm. and it should be coming out in mid February.
Yeah.
I always have to make good with comics, but I did want to mention the publisher, because it actually I really do appreciate Image sort of. You know, taking a chance on something like this, it's very different than what they normally publish, and I think, and hopefully it'll pay off for them.
And 160 pages of glorious Robbie Rodriguez art, correct?
Exactly. I can miss with that.
And yeah. It's not decompressed. It's, by the way, and it's not a decompressed 160 pages either. It's we really do tell 160 pages worth of story.
It was jam-packed with bulimic goodness.
That's the one on the book.
Yeah, I think that's our, that maybe our, yeah, that maybe.
Hey, if you want the poll quote, jam-packed with bulimic goodness, go for it. Mark, you're working on another project, which I don't know if a lot of people have heard about. I checked out the first issue, really enjoyed it, and it's called Fearless. Can you tell us a little bit about your new kind of superhero named Fear?
Yeah, Fearless, again, yeah, it's a superhero book. It's also from Image. I pitched it as a literal man without fear, although maybe it may be actually better described as a literal man with fear, where the protagonist is a superhero who's dependent on an anti-fear drug to fight crime. And, you know, it's he's got a suit kind of like it's somewhere, you know, I liken it to he's a combination between sort of Batman or Daredevil and Iron Man, and the suit, but the suit, he's got an armored suit, but its function is to keep him, you know, give him this anti-fear drug, and you know, he not only needs it to fight crime, but he uses it in his real life through an inhaler, and the story happens is the story is basically, okay, well, what happens when this drug gets taken away from him? And you know, you can see this visual, I should say that it's co-written by Dave Roth. Mm-hmm. And it's the artist is the very talented PJ Holden, who does a lot of 2000 AD work. But I think, and what PJ does and brings to it is, I mean, you see, I think hopefully we do a good job visually of showing what he's like when he's, you know, fearful versus what he's like when he's fearless. And you know, he does a lot of stuff with you know, with vertigo, with, you know, he'll be looking over the ledge of a building. It's how we open the book. The first issue, you know, he's looking over the ledge of the building, and it seems like this insurmountable drop. It's like he's on the top of a skyscraper, and he takes the drug, and you know, then it's just like he's, you know, taking a step off of a stoop or something. Mm-hmm. And you know, and PJ comes up with, you know, and bad guys will look, you know, criminals will look, you know, a lot more menacing when he's running out of the fear drug. As opposed to when, you know, when he's got it with him, they appear like they're frightened of him. And I think it's got an interesting, unique concept, a unique hook for a superhero book. And then I think that particularly PJ the artist really just did a great job in executing it.
Let me jump in here for just a second. I record these interviews out of my house, and quite often my wife will be home at the same time, and we'll hear bits and pieces of the conversation. Well, on this particular night, she got very interested in what we were talking about. So at this point in the interview, my wife Marta jumps in and has a few questions for Robbie and Mark. So that's why the change in conversation. So now let's get back to the interview with the addition of my wife.
I read this, what was it, a book earlier this year. Which one?
Clubbing. Yes.
I enjoyed Clubbing right up until about the last 15 pages. You know, nice goth girl, sent to live with her grandparents in rural England, interesting murder story and all this. So I was just out in the kitchen thinking about your story about college life and sorority girls and all that stuff. Okay, so I'm a girl. I don't read comic books, but okay, there's something a little intriguing about the story. You know, college girl, sorority eating disorder, great. But at the end, are you going to fucking turn this into, like, aliens leaping out of their stomachs, or is it going to be a good ending? Because I was so disappointed at the ending of Clubbing, I almost set it on fire.
She didn't like the dragon, guys.
I haven't read Clubbing, by the way, so I don't want to say anything negative about it. I haven't even read it, but I can guarantee you that, yeah, I mean, Hayes very much stays in the real world of, you know, there's no supernatural elements in it at all. But at the same time, I mean, I think the ending gets really crazy. You know, it gets really crazy. I mean, this is not. It's not an after school special take on it. It's very much, you know, it gets progressively more, I think, hopefully progressively funnier, but definitely progressively more offensive. You know, to the point where, you know, there are women just getting pregnant at the end and losing their hair and branding and literally branding each other with their sorority names and burning down parts of the campus. So it gets crazy, but I think it always stays in the realm of, you know, of reality. It's nothing that you wouldn't.
But did Robbie ask you if he could draw aliens leaping from their stomachs?
Well, I was going to say that he didn't ask, but I always just assume that question is there.
It was so disappointing in Clubbing. I was intrigued for the entire book until the last 15 pages. I felt so betrayed and pissed off.
Yeah, she hasn't read a comic since.
I'll never read another comic again.
Well, please, you know what? We'll give you a free copy of mine, and so hopefully it will, you know.
It'll tell him it'll thin.
And then, maybe that'll bring you back. Because I can promise you, there's no aliens. Not that there's anything wrong with sci-fi, but there's no sci-fi in this. It's just funny girls throwing up.
Yeah, there ain't nothing wrong with sci-fi. I pay my bills.
Okay, then my next question would be, why would you want someone in my age group, genre, whatever, to read your book? Because I'm not a comic book fan overall, but, like, what would intrigue me to read your book then? Why would I say, oh my gosh, I read this awesome graphic novel? Like, why would I want to recommend it to my friends who don't read graphic novels?
I think, you know, Robbie was saying earlier how, you know, sometimes, you know, comics, people think of comics as a genre and not as a medium. And to me, it's just like, it's like film or playwriting. And, you know, I just think it's a comedy. And, you know, it's just like, I think Heather's or, you know, Mean Girls, I think I would recommend that to my male or female friends. You know, just because I think they're funny, those movies, you know, or Clueless. Like, I think those are funny movies. For some people, there's that hurdle of getting over it because so many comic books are about superheroes or have aliens jumping out of their stomachs, or both. And so they, you know, I guess my hope with it is, I mean, look, mostly I just want people to enjoy the story and to laugh at it and be like, oh my God, I've never seen something like this in a comic before. Like, this is really funny. I can't believe they pushed humor this far. But also, if it can, you know, as an added thing, if somebody can read this, you know, can read Hazed and say, hey, you know, like, wow, comics are capable of more than, you know, of more than just being like, you know, Green Lantern, then great. Like,
then, hey, you know, Green Lantern.
There's nothing wrong with Green Lantern. I'm a member of the Sinestro Corps, but you know, we're all. I understand that there are people that just don't like, you know, that don't like certain genres. I feel like it's we're doing something funny, and it should appeal to people regardless of, you know, if you like comedies, and particularly the kind of comedies that I mentioned. I think you'll like it. You know, if you don't, you know, if somebody just hates. Absolutely hates any comedies that have you know women in it. Then I guess this is they're probably not going to sell, and then they can, you know, they can stick with whatever else they like, and that's fine. But I think that you know I really hope that this can make some small step into like you know into getting people like your lovely wife to try a comedy.
I think she's got one more question for?
Well, it's along that same vein of like, okay, so I'm not a big graphic novel reader outside of what my husband forces me to read. Like, how do you market something like that to me? How do you convince me to read a graphic novel over a book or a movie or some other genre? Like, I would never, unless I was married to Chris, like, I would never even think to look at a graphic novel. It doesn't appeal to me. It's not something I grew up with. It's not a medium that I'm that aware of outside of him or used to or would even think to look for a good story. And I love to read. I'm a voracious reader, mm-hmm. if you ask Chris. So, like, how do you appeal to me as a writer, as a creator? What do you do to bring me in? That's what I want to know.
Well, I think there's a couple things. I mean, look, I think part of it is finding, you know, is going to involve me going and trying to find, you know, alternative outlets for, you know, and getting this into the mainstream press where people who don't only read comics read it. But I think if I'm meeting you and I'm pitching this to you one-on-one, and I'm sure, look, you know, like, I'm going to, you know, I plan, you know, I'm single right now, and I plan on dating girls, and I probably like them to read my books and making friends. And, you know, so I'll probably go up to them, and I would say to them, well, like, look, you know, like a book, it's portable. you can carry it around. You can stop reading it and pick it up, and you know it's a lot easier than doing that, you know, than pausing and unpausing something on, you know, a DVD or a movie. But it reads a lot faster, you know. But it's also got pictures, and it reads a lot faster than a book. And I think, you know, but I also think that and this is not kissing Robbie's ass at all, but I think, you know, just looking at it, I think, you know, a great part of that is Robbie's art and looking at Robbie's art. And I can say that, you know, showing it to people that, and that's why, you know, part of the reason I feel so great about the, you know, and so lucky that he worked, that Robbie, you know, agreed to work with me on it is, you know, just showing it to people who are not comic fans. They're like, I think there's something very friendly about Robbie's art. It's not, you know, it's not overly muscled men and women with you know with impossible figures. It's mm-hmm. you know it's just funny, you know. If the look, if you know, if you've read comic strips, if you've read like The Far Side, I mean, you know, I think there's something that people seem able to pick that up in the paper, even, you know, even there's less and less of those, but
sure.
You know, even now, so that's my, I think that's my last pitch to you.
Well, Robbie, you are a newlywed, and congratulations, by the way. How do you sell your wife on even your stuff?
You know what? She did not read hardly any of my stuff at all. But it's funny though, she loves Week 3. Oddly enough, she'll read. Also, Superman just got told her, the same guy that wrote Week 3.
Mm-hmm.
And she is not a comic fan. Well, she grew up in Japan, so she grew up with a generation that reads comics. But she, for some reason, she would not touch American comics whatsoever.
But she'll like Hayes because it's in a size that she's familiar with, right?
No, because it's not left or right.
Oh.
I think that's where we screwed up.
You guys should have written Hayes backwards.
Exactly. I think, I have been thinking, you know, maybe we should have, like, instead of, you know, instead of a variant cover, we should have, like, or, you know, reverse variants for... And then we can sell the remainders off in in Asia.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Well, before we wrap up here, I definitely want to keep mentioning Maintenance. It is an Around Comics favorite, and
I appreciate that. I'm glad you love it.
It is hard to write comedy. It is hard to draw comedy, You and Jim Massey do a superb job of putting a really fun, entertaining, and funny comic out there.
Thank you very much.
Man, anyone that's not reading Maintenance that likes funny books, you should go check it out.
Yes, please. If you like a laugh, in the mind. If you had no soul, then don't worry about it.
Hey, any new news on the movie deal, by the way?
I do know there's a first draft before the strike happened. Haven't read it yet. I just know it's turned in.
Real quick, once again, Mark, when is Hayes going to be hitting bookstores and comic shops?
Hayes should be out in mid-February or mid to late February. I believe it's the 21st is the date we have, although that may be subject to change. And if I can quickly also just say that Fearless is out from Image right now, Grounded, which is the graphic novel I did with Paul Azaceta, is also available in stores. You should also mention Hero Camp is one of Robbie's books, which is maybe similar in genre, and it's written by Greg Thompson, who I need to thank because he's the one who hooked me up with Robbie in the first place.
Greg, who is also a big time organizer for the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund.
Yes, he is, and he's also writing. He's writing one of the books for Blue Water.
Yeah,
I think it's Sinbad.
Sinbad,
yeah.
Sinbad,
a great guy.
And I tell you what, you can catch up with all of these crazy characters by going to imagecomics.com and going to the forums. I think both of you guys I know Robbie, you're always there. Mark, you have your own forum there, right?
Yeah, it's the Mark Sable forum on Image Comics. So please, you know, come by, say hi. There's art there from all the books and I respond to everything. So, you know, you can come. Anybody's free to come there and say hi, harass me, whatever.
Yeah, we have no life, really.
Well, guys, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Robbie, always good to talk with you, my man. And Mark, it's good to get reacquainted with you since we first met at a Wizard World Chicago a couple years ago. So we'll definitely be on the lookout for all that you guys have. Thank you so much for talking with us. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you again soon. And we'd like to thank Robbie, Mark, and Marta for the enlightening conversation. Be sure to be on the lookout for Hazed as it hits local comic shops and bookstores in the middle of February. Mark's other series, Fearless, is on shelves now, as is Robbie and Jim Massey's series, Maintenance. Let's move ahead to our next segment, and it comes all the way from across the pond. That's right, it is the quiet panelologists at work and their A to Z, or Z, of British comics.
Okay, welcome back to the quiet panelologists at work, A to Z, of British comics.
British comics!
A to Z!
Of British comics!
Yeah!
In your face!
Let's get some excitement going.
Woo! What letter were we
on,
John?
As we piece together this piece of crap, sorry?
What letter were we on?
We're on the letter H.
H?
Yes.
Well, that's good, because that's a coincidence, John.
Why is that?
Because I've recently been researching Halo Jones.
How recently?
Literally in the last couple of seconds.
Really? Go.
Okay. Halo Jones, or The Ballad of Halo Jones, was a science fiction comic strip written by he of Sir Alan Moore and drawn by Ian Gibson.
Alan Moore, you say?
That's right.
Is he famous?
I've never heard of him.
No.
Halo Jones first appeared in 2000 AD in 1984, a year before the film Ghostbusters was released.
Really?
In a 5-page story.
Coincidence? I think not.
Something more sinister. It was basically an attempt to bring a female perspective on the testosterone-filled publication that was 2000 AD. Lots of men in 2000 AD, you see, John.
Halo Jones is from the 50th century, isn't she?
That's right, yeah. She's from the 50th century.
Wow. So I heard that it was meant to run for 9 books.
That's right.
But they only got to book 3.
That's it. You know what happened when they got to book 3, John?
What happened?
Well, apparently, the reason why Halo Jones then ended is because Alan Moore had a dispute with Fleetway.
Right.
And he stopped the comic book.
That's unbelievable. Alan Moore had a dispute with a comic publisher.
I know. It's terrible. So Halo Jones only got to see 3 books worth of material out of the available, what would have been 9.
That is ridiculous. So basically, if you go and buy Halo Jones, you haven't got a complete story.
Well, it looks that way. Yeah.
And you never will.
Well, the end of book 3. Should I just ruin the end of book 3?
Yeah, you won.
No,
better not.
Oh, all right, okay, fair enough. Alan Moore has provided an insightful account into how the Ballad of Halo Jones came about in his introduction to the three 1986 Titan editions of the series, John.
Right.
This is true. I'll read this bit.
Okay.
He says the idea was to put a female character in the book, and it was almost revolutionary. Because at that time, you didn't have girls in books.
No, I don't think anyone had actually seen a girl at that point.
That's right. I don't think girls were invented. I think Alan Moore invented girls.
I think he did. You know your favourite group of the 1980s?
Oh, what? You mean Transvision Vamp?
Yeah, they had a song called Hanging Out with Halo Jones.
They did, and funnily enough, I've got the lyrics here.
Oh, right, have you?
Yeah. The verse went, I'm hanging out with Halo Jones, so don't call round because I won't be home. I'm hanging out with Halo Jones. Hanging out with Halo Jones. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Now, Halo Jones, she's a neuromancer. Well, she looks like a dream and she moves like a panther. Halo Jones. It's a girl of ice and fire. She's got everything all the boys desire.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, H, Halo Jones, done.
That's it, done. In that case, my H is the Hotspur.
Ooh, what is the Hotspur?
It was a comic. It was first published as a story paper in 1933, but it became a comic in 1959.
What's a story paper? Is it just a story written on a bit of paper?
I imagine so.
Oh, okay.
But it had, in its first issue, Silliest Snatcher, the Truant Catcher.
Oh, I remember him.
Buffalo Bill's School Days.
I like that.
Japers of the Red Circle.
That was good, good.
Absent-minded Alfie.
It's my favourite.
The Son of Scarface.
Oh, yeah.
The Swooping Vengeance.
Oh, I liked him.
Colorado Kid.
Blimey, there's lots of them, isn't there?
The Traitor of the Tea.
Almost too many.
And the best name for a strip ever.
Go on.
The Big Stiff.
The Big Stiff.
Which I can't imagine what that was like.
No, well, you can't... I'm not going there.
But when it was in World War II... Because there was paper shortages.
Yeah.
It had to be published on alternate weeks with another magazine called Wizard. Mm. Not the Wizard that you know now. It was a different Wizard. And it ran 1,197 issues.
Blimey.
Until 1959, when it was relaunched. And since then, it merged with, like, loads of different comics. And the final issue was in 1981 with issue 1,110.
Blimey.
When it just became part of the Victor. It was just called the Victor then.
I remember the Victor.
Do you?
Yeah. Anyway, that's the A to Z of British comics. H.
For the Hotspur.
And Halo Jones.
You almost forgot what you did.
I did, yeah. The good thing is that these get progressively worse.
No, they'll get better after this.
Oh, okay, cool. I hope so. Okay, bye!
Bye!
And thanks as always to Matt and John of The Quiet Panelologist at Work. Remember, you can find their website at www.panelologist.com. They're also members of the Comics Podcast Network, just like we are. You can find The Quiet Panelologist at Work, Around Comics, Collected Comics Library, and a host of other great comics podcasts by going to www.comicspodcast.com. There are thousands of webcomics out there, and it's really hard to find the ones that are worth your time. So one of the best ways is to get good recommendations. And each week, Professor Jeremy W. Mullins from the Savannah College of Art and Design is here to do just that. And here is Jeremy with this week's webcomic recommendation.
Okay, I'm hyper excited by this week's recommendation. It's a title called Sin Titulo, by Cameron Stewart, and if you're not familiar with his work, he had a phenomenal run on Catwoman. He's done some other mainstream stuff. He was the artist on an Around Comics favorite called The Other Side. He is hands down my favorite cartoonist working right now. Mr. Brian Bowles, the guy who used to do the Long Box of Love here for Around Comics, sent me an email and turned me on to this webcomic by Cameron Stewart. It's amazing. It's awesome. I love it like a rock concert. I love it like a roller coaster. I'm on the edge of my seat. If you like those M. Night Shyamalan movies that are slow to unfold and but compelling, you will love this comic. You can find it, Sin Titulo, at transmission-x.com. It's transmission and then little hyphen and letter x.com. Once you're there, there's a Sin Titulo button. I'm probably butchering the Spanish. Translated, that when you translate that, it means without title. That's the literal translation to that. But when you're there, click on the Sunday button, and that'll take you right into the story. And like I said, I mean, the pacing is terrific, and it's engaging and compelling. It's essentially about a guy named Alex who goes to a nursing home to visit his grandfather to find out that he died like a month ago, and they didn't tell him. And while he kind of rifles through his grandfather's belongings, he finds a photograph with some information on it that sends him on this really bizarre quest. And he goes into like kind of the back bowels of the city, into these weird, highly guarded tunnels with all the secret society weird stuff, or so it appears. There's some interesting flashbacks. There's a lot to the story that's yet to come. Things are just kind of building up and coming together. He updates every Sunday. The artwork's gorgeous. The story is engaging. Check it out. I'm excited. I want you to be excited. Thank you, Mr. Brian Bowles. And go to it. It's at transmission-x.com. Sin Titulo. For Around Comics, I'm Jeremy W. Mullins.
Jeremy Mullins is a professor of sequential art at the Savannah College of Art and Design. You can find more about the school and their programs of study by going to www.scad.edu. This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Ape Entertainment. And available for order right now from Ape is White Picket Fences. The critically acclaimed series returns in a new prestige one-shot featuring two Titanic tales. In The History Lesson, an aging mad scientist makes one last dastardly grasp for power. Then in Beetlemania, giant bugs invade Greenview, destroying everything in their path. Find out why Diamond Scoop magazine named White Picket Fences one of its top 10 books of 2007. Order your copy of the White Picket Fences one-shot today from the January issue of Previews. And to purchase the original three-issue mini-series, head to your local retailer or visit us at www.apecomics.com. And that original three-issue series was one of my favorites of last year. Micah Ferriter's art is fantastic. So if you haven't checked out White Picket Fences, do yourself a favor and order it, or have your local comic shop manager or owner hunt it down for you.
Hello, welcome to Answer Man. This is the portion of the show where you pile even more troubles onto my weary, weary back. Because I'm a little bit tired because tax season's kicked off, and I work in the exciting and lucrative world of accounting. And this week's been a little rough on me. I'm sitting in my kitchen with a glass of red wine, and I figured I have a few moments. Now let's tackle some questions. For those who are curious about what wine I'm drinking, I am drinking Rex Goliath Cabernet Sauvignon. I bought it because it has a rooster on it, and it says 47-pound rooster. Turns out that Rex Goliath was a famous circus attraction in Texas. He was a 47-pound rooster, which goes to prove that if you are a company trying to sell me a product and you want me to look at it, put a giant animal on the front of it. That's almost everything equal. I'll buy something that has an animal on the front of it. So let's get to the questions. We've talked enough about my burgeoning drinking problem. I've just said last couple weeks, I've been getting angry, weary, tired. You know, I feel like we all need a break. I think comic fandom, the internet fandom, everyone gets all worried about Spider-Man and all that stuff. I think we all need to take a vacation. I think we all need to go to a resort together, and we all just need to hash this stuff out and just figure out a middle ground. So in the spirit of just relaxing, I'm going to answer a softball question this week, where I get to nerd out about something that's not me yelling at the people asking me questions. So let's go right to it. Our question this week is from Dave, NJ Baritone, I guess, or he's a New Jersey baritone, I guess. I'm guessing there. So let's move on. Dear Mr. Rosakis, Mr. Caters, is there a link between the Alan Scott Green Lantern and the Guardians of Anoa? I know that the JSA, JLGLs, that's confusing, I'm going to say Alan Scott. I know that Alan Scott's ring is supposedly powered by magic and the others by super science. By others, he means the Hal Jordan Green Lantern Corps. But did DC ever explain if there is a relationship or just some wild coincidence? Well, I do believe at some point, I tried looking through my issues, and I couldn't quite find where this happened, but at some point they explained that the Owens wanted to gather all the magic in the universe because they're science nerds, and science nerds are afraid of magic, and I guess vice versa, maybe. It makes sense to me. If I was a magician, I would probably be afraid of science as well. They tried to gather all that magic and put it into something, into the center of a star. That star became sentient. It became called the Star Heart, which is where Alan Scott's ring gets its power from. That being said, that's a very new addition to the character. I guess if you want to look back in history, you could say the Owens probably took all the magic into Earth 1 universe and threw it into the Earth 2 universe. It would kind of make sense because the Golden Age characters are more magical based. They're based a little bit more on that pulpy magic stuff going on, where the Silver Age, way more science fiction-y. You know, people like Julie Schwartz and Gardner Fox got their starts in the published science fiction field, so that makes sense. So you can kind of see that happening. But through most, if you go back and read all that old stuff, there's no reference. They're not talking about it. They just both happen to be Green Lanterns. But if it makes sense to you, just think the Owens took all the magic. They tried to contain it because they don't like magic. They put it into the Star Heart. It manifests itself as a chunk of green rock that Alan Scott found in China when he was an engineer building a railroad there. He fashioned a lantern out of it and a ring, and that's where he gets his powers from. You know, simple, quick, easy. That's the type of stuff. That's the type of questions I love answering. We do have a second part of the question, which goes as follows. Are any of the AC gang planning to attend the New York Comic Con this year? You still owe me a shot for donating to the Hero Initiative last year. I know after April 15th, you'll need an excuse to escape into some serious comic geekiness. I hope to see you guys there. As of right now, I think Chris is planning on going. I'm not really planning on going. It's right after tax season, and the last thing I want to do is deal with people. No offense to anyone in New York, but what I do right after tax season, I usually sleep for a day and just sit around because I need that sort of decompression time, because it's stressful. But I think Chris might be going, and who knows, maybe if I get some sort of wild, whim, I'll go out to New York. It was crazy last year. I had a great time, but I think if I went this time, I would only go to the convention for one day, and I would just hang out in New York for the rest of the time. I like conventions and all, but man, 3 days in a convention, too goddamn much for me. That's Answer Man for this week. If you have questions, always feel free to email them to tom@aroundcomics. We also take voicemail. I would love to hear your sultry voices accusing me of being wrong, accusing me of not knowing what I'm talking about. I like that. You can leave a voicemail at 888-977-5903. I think it's just voicemail. I don't think you have to hit like 900 numbers to get to ours. So there's no excuse for you not to. And I don't care what your question. Your question could be made up. You could try and trick me. I don't mind that. I don't mind looking like a fool, as you can tell. So until I talk to you guys next week, Have a beautiful weekend, and go Packers!
All right, let's move on and find out what is coming out in DVDs this week, as well as getting a cult DVD recommendation from Will Pfeiffer. And as you already know, Will is the writer of Catwoman. When he's not doing that, he is a DVD and movie reviewer for the Rockford Register Star. And for all of Will's DVD recommendations and Jeremy's webcomic recommendations, we have a sticky thread at the forum at aroundcomics.com. So if you want to find out some of their past picks or have forgotten a couple, just go to the thread and they are all listed there. So here is Will with this week's new releases and cult DVD pick.
This week, after years of waiting, the first season of Swamp Thing, the TV series, arrives on DVD. Did you even remember that there was a Swamp Thing TV series? I didn't, and I've been watching dumb comic book-based television since before I could walk. Plus, I actually wrote two issues of Swamp Thing. This one's not to be confused with the Swamp Thing movies, which, in case you're keeping track of the leading ladies, co-starred Adrienne Barbeau and Heather Locklear. This series, which instead aired in the early 90s, no doubt on some late-night cable network, featured former MTV babe Kari Wuhr in the Abigail role, and once again starred longtime Swamp Thing Dick Durock as the creature himself. If you're looking for some cheesy TV fun, this could be a good bet. If you're looking for the real thing, pick up some of those Alan Moore Swamp Thing trades instead. Also out this week is Saw 4, the latest in America's favorite torture porn series, and Sydney White, with teen dream Amanda Bynes playing a modern Snow White in a half-assed ripoff of Revenge of the Nerds. I'll let you decide which movie is more horrifying. This week's cult DVD pick goes all the way back to 1949 and The Fountainhead. It's a balls-out melodrama about, of all things, architecture, and it also happens to be one of the craziest movies ever made. Don't let the classy tone and big budget fool you. This is one strange movie. Based on the novel by Ayn Rand, The Fountainhead follows no-compromise architect Howard Roark, played by Gary Cooper, as he bullies his way past losers, wimps, and idiots. In fact, virtually everyone in this movie except Roark is a pathetic whiner who refuses to see his greatness. Rand's writings, including this novel, were a huge influence on Spider-Man artist Steve Ditko, and his later comics read like a low-budget adaptation of this movie. The movie itself feels like a comic book, with two-dimensional characters making crazy speeches and doing even crazier things for no reason at all. In other words, it's a hell of a movie. That's the DVD report, and I'm Will Pfeiffer for Around Comics.
You can find Will's written reviews at the Rockford Register Star by visiting go.rrstar.com and going to the entertainment section. You can also visit Will's blog at willpfeiffer.com, and remember to read Catwoman every month. Get you ready for the week ahead with new trade paperback and collected edition releases. Here is Chris Marshall from the Collected Comics Library with his Trade 5.
Hi everybody, it's time for this Monday's Trade 5. Let's start off with DC Comics this week, where we have Showcase Presents Aquaman Volume 2. This collects Aquaman 7 through 23, World's Finest 130 through 133, 135, 137, 139, and The Brave and the Bold, 51. Tales of the New Gods trade paperback, collecting Mr. Miracle Special, Jack Kirby's Fourth World 2 through 20, and Orion 3 and 4, 6 through 8, 10, 12, 15, and 18 and 19, plus a never-before-published story by writer Mark Miller with art by Steve Ditko and Mike Gray. This is for $20. JLA Hypothetical Woman Trade paperback, collecting JLA Classified 16 through 21 for $13. Tangent Comics gets a Volume 2 trade, collecting Tangent Comics Joker, Nightwing, Batman, Secret Six, and Doom Patrol for $20. Over at Marvel, we have Marvel Masterworks Golden Age Daring Mystery Volume 1. This is the variant Volume 89, collecting Daring Mystery Comics 1 through 4 for $55. If you guys are picking up the current series of the 12, then you'll be definitely interested in these classic Golden Age stories. Annihilation Conquest Book 1 hardcover is out, collecting Annihilation Conquest Prologue, Quasar 1 through 4, Star-Lord 1 through 4, and the Annihilation Saga for $30. Hulk Visionaries Peter David Volume 5 The Trade, collecting Incredible Hulk 364 through 372 and Hulk Annual 16 for $20. Fantastic Four The End The Trade paperback, collecting Fantastic Four The End 1 through 6 for $15. And Ultimate Vision The Trade finally comes out this week. We've been waiting a long time for that one. Collecting Ultimate Vision 1 through 5 and the Zero issue as well. That is for $15. Over at Image, we have Madman Volume 3 of the trade paperback. This collects Madman Comics 12 through 20 and the Madman King Size Super Groovy Special for $18. Over at Devil's Due, we have G.I. Joe Storm Shadow, the trade Volume 1 solo, collecting issues 1 through 5 of his series. And over at IDW, we have The Complete Terry and the Pirates Volume 2. This, of course, is going to be a 6-volume set when it's all said and done. And lastly, over at Virgin Comics, we have Nicolas Cage's Voodoo Child, The Trade. This collects issues 1 through 6 of his series, and his son's series, I should say. Now, if you guys listen to my show, The Collected Comics Library, you'll know that I'm a big stickler for release dates and making sure books are on time. And I have a list from Comics List that they did this week, and they have some information coming down from DC Comics and Marvel Comics, for that matter, on new release dates for a few books. So I want to give you guys a quick little update on some trade paperbacks coming down that have been delayed somewhat. So let's look at Marvel Comics first. We have the Marvel Masterworks Uncanny X-Men hardcover. This is Volume 6, both the regular and the variant editions. It is coming out February 13th. Powers hardcover Volume 2, the definitive collection. This will be coming out March 26th. Thor by Michael Straczynski. The Premier Hardcover Volume 1 will be coming out April 16th. Thor Visionaries by Walt Simonson, The Trade Volume 5 is coming out February 6th. And X-Men Hardcover Endangered Species is coming out next week, hopefully January 30th. Moving over to DC, the Adam Strange Archives Volume 3 Hardcover has a new ship date of April 30th. And Infinite Crisis Trade Paperback has a new date of February 27th. So now you guys are all up to date. And for a really big list of everything that's coming out, and it's all updated, come over to my site over at the CCL. On the left-hand side, you'll see a button for the release schedule, and you can see everything that is coming out, well, at least preliminary, right, giant preliminary list of everything that's coming out in all of 2008. So that'll about do it for this Monday, Straight 5, 4 Around Comics. I'm Chris Marshall, Collected Comics Library.
And a big thank you, as always, to Chris Marshall at the Collected Comics Library. Make sure to check out his podcast at collectedcomicslibrary.com. He also keeps pretty up-to-date blog there concerning new collected edition releases. So get all of your collected edition information from Chris. He is the best in the biz. For new single issue releases, it's usually Tom's spot, but I think he is in mourning over the Green Bay Packers loss. So I will handle it this week. I won't be as witty as Tom, but I will try and give you just as good of information. So here we go, right off the top from Marvel Comics. Amazing Spider-Man number 548. This concludes the first of the thrice monthly Amazing Spider-Man issues. This one done by Dan Slott and Steve McNiven. So, Spider-Man fans, rejoice. You survived your first month. Astonishing X-Men number 24. And apparently everything from the first issue to now comes down to this. That's what the splashy solicit says anyway. Avengers The Initiative number 9 ships this week. It's one of the few titles out of The Initiative that I really enjoy. The other one being The Order. And it also ships this week with issue number 7. You can also look forward to Iron Man number 25 and Punisher Max number 54. This concludes the Long Cold Dark storyline, and they promise that one of either Barracuda or Frank Castle is not going to walk away from this one. So you can probably bet which one is not going to make it out of this issue, but it has been a very fun arc. We have Runaways number 29, and one of my new favorites, She-Hulk. It's number 25 issue. I really enjoy what Peter David is doing with She-Hulk in this, so see if that series continues to stay entertaining. Ultimate Fantastic Four reaches its 50th issue. It seems like that series just started yesterday. Apparently, the Ultimate Universe has been around long enough because they now have the Ultimate Secrets, where longtime secrets of the Marvel Universe, the Ultimate Universe, that is, are going to be revealed. To wrap up the Ultimate talk, we have Ultimate Spider-Man number 118. The X-Men sees its 207th issue, and Jeff Parker's new stories for the very first X-Men team, X-Men First Class, hits its 8th issue. And look out, those pesky zombies are back with Marvel Zombies 2, number 4 of 5. And, oh, I thought that all of our Ultimate titles were done for the week, but here's Ultimate Iron Man number 2, number 2 of 4, and Jeff Loeb and Mr. Maduria are back with Ultimates 3, number 2 of 5, and we'll see if they fix the coloring on this one. And we'll wrap everything up with Young Avengers Presents, number 1 of 6. I'm a big fan of the Young Avengers, really enjoyed the series, wish it had continued, and so I've been excited about these, and if you didn't know about these, please take note, because this one's going to be written by Mr. Ed Brubaker, which in my book automatically makes it worth checking out. And now let's go check out the Distinguished Competition. It is DC, of course. They have Blue Beetle number 23. Countdown is out this week, of course, with issue number 14. And we have Green Lantern number 27, as Geoff Johns continues to make Green Lantern interesting to me, which I didn't think was possible. So kudos to Mr. Johns. We have the Legion of Superheroes number 38. The Teen Titans number 55 comes out this week, as does Wonder Woman number 16, as Gail Simone continues her dream project with the Dodsons. And finally from DC, we have the comic I will probably be reading first whenever I get home from the local comic shop this Wednesday. That is Crime Bible, The Five Lessons of Blood, in its penultimate issue. It's number 4 of 5. It is written, of course, by Mr. Greg Rucka, with art this issue by Diego Almos. From Image Comics, we have C.B. Cebulski's Drain, number 6. Invincible reaches its 50th issue this week, so congratulations to Robert Kirkman and the Invincible crew on that achievement. We see Madman, Atomic Comics, number 6. Mice Templar, number 3, from Michael Avon Oeming. We have New World Order, number 1. PvP, number 38. And Frank Frazetta's Death Dealer wraps up this week with number 6 of 6 on that limited series. Look for many a collected edition of that in the coming months, as the runaway success of Death Dealer will be coming into bookstores in I'm sure hardcover and trade paperback formats. And to wrap up our single issue releases, it's a pretty light week at Dark Horse with Conan number 48, Star Wars Dark Times number 8, Usagi Yojimbo number 109, and in their limited series we have The Scream number 3 of 4, and Speak of the Devil number 4 of 6, that is from Gilbert Hernandez of Love and Rockets fame. So those are your single issue releases. I'm sure you're all looking forward, as am I, to having Tom back next week. So hopefully that will get you ready for the week ahead whenever you hit your local comic shop. And that'll take care of another Monday edition of Around Comics, the Comic Culture Podcast. Remember to come back on Thursday for Around Comics, the Comic Culture Roundtable. It's an informal and entertaining look at different things around the world of comics and pop culture. Remember, you can visit us online by going to www.aroundcomics.com, become a member of our forum, and put your feedback on this and other episodes. You can email us at info@aroundcomics.com. You can email me personally at chris@aroundcomics.com. You can visit other places on the internet like Comic Space and MySpace. We're there. And you know, my personal favorite, if you want to be as cool as Andy Parks, you can leave us an iTunes music review. So come back on Thursday for lots of great roundtable comic book talk, and then again next Monday for another installment of Around Comics, the Comic Culture Podcast. In the meantime, in between time, we'll be everywhere in and around comics. I know that you don't love me. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.
Try my loving, baby, one more time.